Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Nice to see everyone here. Welcome to our visitors. I want to talk about some family issues this morning. I think nearly every family goes through times when things are not quite what they used to be. The original excitement is gone. People are just kind of going through the motions. And they don't get from here to there overnight. It's not like one day it's exciting and the next day this is just really boring. It's a gradual drifting thing. You know, little things come up and they kind of change their routine a little bit. I mean, maybe the Olympics are on TV, and so the family wants to watch the Olympics, so they, instead of sitting down together at supper like they usually do, they grab their food and sit in front of the TV set. Then when the Olympics are over, you know, there's something else on TV, and before you know it, something that was really very important to that family and that they needed to keep them together has just kind of been replaced by TV. Maybe one of them has a job that's demanding a lot more time. It's stress is going up and he's not with the family as much. Or maybe there's someone in the extended family that needs a lot of extra attention, and that puts stress on the family. Whatever the cause, things come up that just kind of drain out the emotional energy of the family. And you know what people do then? Well, unfortunately, in our society, what they usually do, or often do, is, hey, well, let's get a divorce. You know, we lost the fire. That's pretty sad. But I'm going to talk about those kind of families. We are a family here. This congregation's a family. And the same thing I've described that happens to physical families happens to spiritual families, and it has actually happened to us in this congregation. Churches have ups and downs just like homes have ups and downs. And any of you who've been here for very long know that I've talked quite a bit about the dangers of Christians walking out on their brethren when times get hard, and how that is displeasing to God. That this is not like a movie theater where you all just buy a ticket and come, and then if you don't like the service next week, you can go to a different movie theater. It's not that. It's a family. We're part of this family, and when things get down and we're not so happy with it, God doesn't give us the option of just, well, let's just walk out and pick another church that's more fun. You know, that the attitude behind that is the very same attitude that causes people to walk out on their wives and their husbands. It's the very same thing. And unfortunately, an awful lot of our brethren all over the country do not understand that. And I think this congregation has got that message, and I'm thankful for that. Of course, it's not like they have a lot of choice. You live in New England, and there aren't a church on every corner that you go to. Nevertheless, I have seen people make efforts and hang in through difficult times, and I appreciate that. But I want to talk about what happens when a church kind of loses its zip. When Jesus wrote to the church at Ephesus in Revelation chapter 2, he said in verse 4, "Nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love." Now that's just like what I've been describing that happens in families. But here was a whole church that left their first love. And that is what I think a number of us believe has happened to this congregation. And I want to talk about that for however much time it takes this morning. I'm thankful that we do have a number in this congregation that are determined to change that. And so part of what I'm doing this morning is kind of giving a report on some things that a number of people have talked about and have started to do differently. Because not everyone here was part of those discussions and those meetings. So I want to tell you what we've talked about, some of the things we decided to do, and some things that are yet in the future. Some of these things we don't have as much control over, but it's still something that we need to be at least aware of and thinking about, especially praying about. First of all, let me just set the groundwork for it. I mean, I've made the statement, you know, we've left our first love. And I'll give you my reasons for that. We've been with the congregation for 28 years. Next month, it'll be 28 years since we drove up in a rented moving van with all of our possessions and settled in for what has turned out to be the longest time I've lived in any place in my whole life. And a church like none other that I've ever been part of. And I see that said in a good way. Learned a lot about what it means to be a church, what it means to serve the Lord as in a group. But in those 28 years, I think the high point of the church was 1987, which is a long time ago. That year, Earl Metcalf came and worked with us for 1 year. Some of you remember him. I mean, that's a long time ago. Some weren't even here at the time. But I think he may have baptized just about as many people in that 1 year as what Bruce baptized the whole 19 years he was with us. Now, I haven't counted it up, and you know, we might argue about numbers, but a lot was happening that year, and it wasn't just Earl Metcalf. Others were doing work. There were home studies going on. There were conversions happening. There are several people who are here today who were baptized in that period of time. It was an exciting time. A little while later, Bruce came to be with us, and he was with us for 19 years. After he'd been with us for some years, I can't tell you how long, but at some point, I remember noticing we just weren't reaching the lost like we used to. And I tried to reason it out in my mind why that was happening. And one of the thoughts I had was that Bruce wasn't really cut out for teaching the gospel one-on-one. He just didn't have the gift of personal work. Of course, now I know what it was, and everyone else here does too. Once we learned what he'd been doing that whole time, we understood why he wasn't converting lots of people. The wonder was he was converting anybody. And I also understand why the rest of us weren't converting very many people too. Because God is not going to bless a church that has sin in their midst like that. You remember when Achan in the Old Testament took the gold and the silver from Jericho when God had said, all of it goes to me. And it was only his family that knew about it, but the whole nation suffered. And I'm convinced that the whole church suffered for something that we didn't even know was going on for most of that time. We only found out about a month before Bruce left, in fact. Bruce moved away 2 years ago this month. But we haven't seen very much change for the better in those 2 years. I had hoped. I expected. That's our problem. We've got the problem out. And now we'll start growing. We have seen a little bit of growth, although actually in numbers we've gone down in those 2 years. And some of the people here were feeling that as a family, we were in one of those low points, just like I described at the beginning, that will sometimes happen in a physical family. It's just not what it used to be. And, I mean, face it, no husband or wife can always be on a honeymoon. I mean, it doesn't work that way. But there come times, sometimes in a marriage, where it's just, this is just not good, it's not what it ought to be, and we need to change it. And that happens in church, too. And we had gotten to that point. I don't think they were imagining things when they were seeing this. I think we had gotten to that point where we had left our first love. And so over the past several weeks, several of us have had some discussions on Sunday nights. Ralph has been the one who's directed those, and he's done a good job of directing those discussions. And we covered two levels in our discussions. The first level is, what can we individually do right now to make a difference? And then what are some of the things that the church can aim for in the more distant future that will also make a difference? And so those are the two points I'm going to cover in the lesson. And then I want to end up just with coming back a little bit, what can you and I do? Although that gets covered as well. But I've got a list of six different things that we suggested in our meetings that we can do as individuals, as members of this congregation, that can make a difference. And the first thing is, spend more time with each other as brothers and sisters. And a lot of that needs to happen outside of services, although we'll talk a little bit later about in the services. We could have potlucks. We could meet at someone's house. We could meet at a local park. On a smaller scale, individuals could invite each other over to their houses. Come over for a meal. Come over for popcorn. Matthew can invite people to his house to play the Wii. Actually, he's done that before. Do things together. Byron, who was with us a couple years and got transferred back to Texas, he was great at that. Any of you who knew him knew. I mean, he'd invite someone that liked to fish. You know, come on, let's go fishing together. He took Reese a couple times with him, and Reese enjoyed it. I mean, that did good. It did good, and he did that with other people too. Someone needs to get their firewood in for the winter. He'd go over and help them cut the firewood. That builds bonds. I mean, again, comparing to the physical family. I mean, if your physical family is on a lull, how are you going to get it back up? You're going to have to spend some time together. And that's what we talked about in as a spiritual family. We need to find ways to spend time together. And then a strange thing came up. Some of these things that I list, you'd say, well, yeah, I could have predicted that. Other things, it surprised me. We were talking about how can we reach our visitors. Now, we of course get visitors from out of state, which we have some here. We're happy to have you, but we're not really trying to convert you, because you wouldn't be here if you weren't a Christian to start with. But we get people from the community that come. And they'll just walk in and sit down. And what can we do to try to help these people? And John Dewey was the one that made the observation. He says, a big problem is that when they come, he says, no one's here. I'm the only one here. John Tippett opens up the building about half an hour before certain times for services, and everyone else shows up at the last minute. In fact, if you think about it, probably more often than not, we start our services late. I mean, everyone's just used to it. We just show up at the last minute or a few minutes late. And, you know, we kind of rush around, you know, everyone try to get seated, or else, you know, kind of tiptoe in because they're already singing. And there's no time at all to welcome the visitor. And in fact, the visitor sits there for 10 minutes maybe, thinking, what have I done? And so John suggested, you know, if some of your other people would come, you know, then they wouldn't have to put up with a cranky old bachelor for all that time. And then Tracy Allen mentioned that when she was a girl and her Uncle Ralph was preaching here, he would arrive an hour early, and Tracy's family would get here a half hour early. And so we all listened, and we thought, we could do something about that. That's something we could change. In the past, my own family would arrive usually about 5 minutes before time to start, and there might be one car in the parking lot, maybe none, because John walks, so he doesn't have a car. So Wednesday night was the first time after this suggestion came, and so we very carefully made sure we left early. We got here 50 minutes before time. A bunch of cars in the parking lot. People were here, you know, chatting, ready to go. We started on time. Wednesday night on time. Can you believe that? And we were in the mood for it. It was a small change, but, you know, it makes a huge difference. We all felt good. We didn't feel like, you know, we were all scrambling around just to barely to make it and, you know, kind of sit through a service. We were ready for it. And it had a nice service. So, you know, we were doing this for our visitors. We didn't actually have any visitors Wednesday night, but it actually profited the whole congregation. And again, going back to a physical family, you think about what is it? Consider a parallel in a physical family. You know, you have supper together, at least I hope you do. What happens if you know, hey, time for supper, and you know, the husband says, go ahead without me. I'm in the middle of this show. I'll come as soon as the show's over. What's that do for the family? You know, or else, you know, time for supper. People rush in, grab some food, and plonk themselves back in front of the TV set. You know, that's kind of the equivalent of what we've been doing without realizing. And again, I'm not trying to point the blame. These things just kind of, they slowly creep up on people. They've crept up on all of us. And we needed to stop and take notice of what we have been doing. And so that's a change we made. And anyone that was here Wednesday night has already knows, wow, that was great. So we made sure we got here again 15 minutes early. And again, cars in the parking lot, people chatting. I mean, it was great. Started on time for the class this morning. Well, another thing that came up, and again, this wasn't a planned one, but when we were talking about starting early, we asked Brendan, because Brendan is a East College student visiting us from Vermont. He's going to be with us for, counting this year, 3 more years, so that's great. So we asked him, you know, well, over there in Milton, Vermont, do people show up early for? Oh yeah, he says they do. They show up quite a bit early for the service. And so then we said, well, do they do all their visiting beforehand? And then so then when the service is over, they just all hop in the cars and drive off. He says, oh no, they stay quite a long time afterwards. So we were all thinking about this. Okay. And you know, that's something else we can do. Instead of rushing off after the service, we can stay and talk and get closer to each other. And again, to relate that to homes, in my experience, supper is the one meal that the families usually take together. We've always done that in my own family. And after the meal, we would generally sit around at the table for a while longer and talk, do something together. When the boys were young, I'd usually read them a book. They'd do the dishes. We didn't have a dishwasher until they got a little bit older, so they'd be doing the dishes and all that, and I'd read to them. Now I notice Matthew does that in his family, reading some of the same books that I read to the family when they were growing up. And now that all the kids are out of the house, my wife and I often just sit at the table and keep talking after the supper's over. Because, you know, people are busy, but when you're there together, that's a chance to talk things over and build bonds, encourage people, and so we've been doing that. So we're getting here early and staying later and having more time with each other, and it makes a difference. It really makes a difference. All right, that's three things. I've got three to go. We suggested that we could do a better job with the announcements, which is kind of beating up on just two guys. It's going to have two people doing the announcements. But the announcements set the tone for the service. And now part of the announcements comes from being prepared, and that comes from being here early and everyone else being here early so they can tell the guy what the announcements are. But also how he gives the announcements. Does he speak loud enough? Is he happy to see people? Is he happy to be here? And, you know, how does the service start? It starts with announcements, starts with a prayer, it starts with the first song. All these things help set the tone for how the service is going to go. And so we thought, well, we can make a difference there. Something else we suggested, I don't know whose idea this was, but it was someone in the service last week, we could call someone. I mean, there's people that might not be here on a Sunday, we don't know why, and we could give them a call. So we decided, all right, everyone, we'll make a goal to call one person this week. And my guess is everyone did that, and probably some people did more than one. I'm a little bit worried that, you know, if everyone does more than one, there will be some people that their phones are ringing off the hook. And then finally, we suggested that we could do some more home Bible studies. Now, we do have some home studies going on. I know of two of them personally. But we made the comment that in the past we used to have more, and that they really do some good. So we didn't make a direct goal, you know, how are we going to make this change, but we did mention that. And again, when I think back to what I call the heyday of the congregation in 1987, which I hope that won't be a permanent high watermark, but when I think back on that, there were a lot of home studies going on. So those are the six things that we decided. We're going to continue having these meetings, not every Sunday night, of course, but more often than what we have previously, and see if we can come up with some ideas to do more. Now, I want to switch to the second half, where we talked about more distant future and really things that we have less control over, but we need to discuss them anyway, and I want to bring them for the whole congregation's benefit. And to an extent, in this section, I have to say, for I'm offering my own judgments on the matter. Given things, a lot of these things are not things that are really in our own control. I'm just offering you my own judgment on what I would like to see happen. And I'm not claiming that this is everyone's view. But I do think we all need to be thinking about them, praying about them, and discussing them as well. About 3 years ago, several members of the Penobscot Valley Church visited us on a Sunday night, and they told us that they wanted to discuss the possibility of putting the two groups together. They know that our views are different from their views on certain things, but they didn't really know what the differences were, even though that church actually came out of this church about 35 years ago, but there's very few people there now that were there then. And they told us, they said, tell us what we would have to give up if we would join and be part of your congregation. And they said, we think God's displeased at this disunity. We think God wants us to be one. And I agree with them. Jesus said in John 17, verse 20, he says, I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, but that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. Disunity among God's people damages the message to the world. And Jesus knew that, and that's why he wanted us to be united. Each one of us is trying to model Jesus in our lives. Jesus and God are one, and we need to be one with each other. The split that caused that church was actually part of a national movement that swept the country back in the 60s. I wasn't very old back in those days, but I do remember the church I was in split. In fact, there would be hard to find churches that didn't. It was a terrible time. And there's nothing I could do to undo what was done in the 60s. But to the extent that I can encourage and participate in having unity today, I want to do that. From what I can tell, I think most members of this church are in favor of that merger, but I understand not everybody. Those who are opposed, I think, are opposed because of concerns that even if those brethren agreed to give up certain practices, if they came to be with us, that their attitude would still infect this congregation and would eventually lead us to do things that these people would believe to be wrong. And I understand that concern. It's not something I would dismiss. All human relationships are a risk. Anyone that comes into this congregation is bringing with him a risk. Now, it may be the other way around. We may create good from the relationship, but it's a risk. You get married to somebody, it's a risk. And there's plenty of people that have seen the downside of the risk. So, I'm not here to tell you that, wow, you know, we join up with this church, we get a bunch of extra people, and you know, it's a no-risk thing. Yeah, it's not. The truth of the matter is, every one of us here in this congregation is also a risk to this church. The question is whether we love the Lord, and that's the only thing that will turn that thing around. The issues, and people ask me every so often, well, what is it that's the issue? And it's really too complicated for me to go into it this time. I could summarize it by saying that the brethren in the Penobscot Valley Church will be willing to spend their money to do the work of the church in ways that the brethren here would not be willing to do. The term that's usually used to describe it, we would say that those brethren are institutional brethren, and we are non-institutional. Now, I need to set the record straight on where I stand on this matter. I mentioned where they came in about 3 years ago, and we've been talking with them ever since. And Mark Hyde, who's one of their members, although he's now in Arkansas, he's hoping to move back. He's been down there for a while. He got transferred. But every time he's back on vacation, he always stops in at our service. We'll see him on Sunday night or Wednesday night. He really wants to see the unity. But lots of others do. I mean, I've talked with several of them. They've come to me. They really think it's wrong that we have the two churches. They want to have unity. But Mark's really pushing hard on it. And he didn't. He had no idea what the difference was. And I finally loaned him a book to help him understand. And he liked it. He said, in fact, when he gave it back, he says, mine's on the way. I've ordered it. So, he appreciated that it was telling him what the issue was. From my own views changed about 2 years ago. So up until about 2 years ago, I was convinced that institutionalism was wrong and that that's not something that a church ought to do. At the same time as I believed that, I was also firmly convinced that that is not something that ought to divide God's people. I know everybody divided back in the 60s. That was a sin. What can I say? Just because we differ on something like that doesn't mean that we have to divide, nor does it mean that one side is faithful to God and the other side is unfaithful to God. In this congregation, we've had things we've disagreed on, and we've been able to work through them. And working through them doesn't mean, everyone's going to have to believe the way I believe. It means having respect for one another and being careful not to ask others to do things that would violate their consciences. That's what it takes. And I know God would rather have us make difficult accommodations with one another rather than divide. But as far as my views on the subject go, they started changing about 2 years ago. And I'm just bringing this up because I have to be honest with you and let you know where I stand on the issue. For the past year and a half, I've been involved in an email discussion with a number of brethren on the topic of what's technically called binding examples, which only people my age or older have even heard of that term. But the fact of the matter is that in Churches of Christ, a number of our rules that we think the Bible teaches come strictly from examples. And this is no exception, the institutionalism issue. And what I've learned from that study is that the Bible does not teach that we get commands out of examples. And there's been several of the members here in this congregation that have followed that discussion, because it's on one of the Yahoo discussion groups, and several here followed it. And I think every one of them can tell you that no one has been able to bring up any verse to show that God expects us to get commands from examples. Examples have their place, but we don't deduce unwritten commands that way. And so the consequences are pretty major about that. Again, I'm not saying you have to believe that way in order for me to have fellowship with you. And I realize this gives some people pain because it affects issues they've considered very dear, and I'm not asking them to violate their consciences, but it does have some major issues, and so I don't now have the same fear of the doctrine of that congregation that I did 3 years ago when they first came to us, but I still want to emphasize that even before I changed my understanding of how we find out commands in the Bible, even before that, I was firmly convinced that Christians can worship together even when they differ on things like that. I think they can worship together when they differ on things far more serious than that. But I don't pretend it's easy. It is not easy. And let me just state, I mean, some people may be sitting there thinking, oh, I can't think this would just be easy, you know. Get an extra 20 people in this congregation and we'll just be so happy. I view this as what would be the most difficult thing this church has ever done in the 28 years I've been here. I don't think I'm being naive about this, thinking this is just great. It's difficult. I would not suggest it unless I thought that God wanted us to do it. Sometimes God wants us to do difficult things. I compare it to what unfortunately is pretty common these days, blended families. You get a father that has teenage kids and he marries a woman who is a mother of teenage kids, and they join the two families and watch the sparks fly is usually what happens. That is a difficult thing. Now, you may recall Jay Geyer that preached the most recent meeting here. He did that. His wife died. We knew her. I've never met his current wife, but we knew her. He still had several kids at home when he married a widow who had several kids still at home, and they combined their families and raised their youngest teenagers together. And he said, those teenagers are very good friends across the blended family. He said the ones who'd already grown up and left the family before he got married to his present wife. They didn't get close like that, which is not a surprise, but he did it. They were successful. It can be done. And interesting enough, when he was preaching for a church in Mississippi, I think it was Corinth, Mississippi, they had the exact same thing happen in the church, just like this. They had a group of brethren from an institutional church come to them and ask, could we join with you? And he and the other elders of that church met with them, and the deacons too, and they met, and it took a long period of time, and they worked through it. And they ended up combining their two groups. And he says it's worked very well. They have been very careful to try to be respectful to people on both sides. There are elders now that are from each of the original groups. Whenever they have gospel meetings, they actually alternate between getting a preacher from one background versus the other background. When they have lectures, they have some of each coming in. I've never seen another church that's tried to do that. But I find it interesting that he's the one that does the teenage blended family, and then he does the same thing in the congregation. All right, moving on. The other issue I want to talk about when we have discussed this is about getting a preacher. I've got to start with a series of sermons I preached 3.5 years ago. 3.5 years ago, Bruce announced he was going to look for another place to go. It took him a lot longer than he thought to find a place. And then the whole thing just fell apart, and it's grief. But I preached a series of sermons 3.5 years ago, basically on how to get a preacher. And, you know, in the series of sermons, I pointed out, you know, the usual way we get it just doesn't work. You get people you don't know. And I pointed to Bruce as that was the way to do it, because he'd spent a lot of time with us over a period of years before he came and joined us as a preacher. So that shows how much I know. Most of the preachers this church has had during the last three decades, have done more harm than good. And I mean most by a huge percentage. I'm talking about people where we would have been better off paying them their salary to stay away. We would have done better. And I understand that. I think a number of people have view things as having gotten worse after Bruce left. And I don't view that, although I think I know what's going on. We were in bad shape when Bruce was here, but we were comfortable. When you're comfortable, you don't realize you're in bad shape. We weren't doing all that much when Bruce was here, in each of us individually, and we had a preacher. When we had visitors, we didn't have to worry about them. Hey, Bruce will take care of that. You know, he'll go make sure they get visited and all that. Now, I shudder when I think about that today, but that was our view. I think we're better now for realizing that we're bad off than we were back then for being comfortable thinking, hey, this is fine. The preacher was just masking the problem. But I'm not suggesting we shouldn't get a preacher. Earl Metcalf has said he did a lot of good for the congregation. You know, I just wish there were more of that kind of person to go around, and if we could get someone like that, it'd be wonderful. There are some issues that make it more difficult to get a preacher. And we've discussed these, and I want to mention them so the whole church is aware of this. And to try to help people to understand that it's not a straightforward thing just to get a preacher. You know, We've actually had people contact the church. Hey, I'm available. Would you like me to move here? And I've had other people, Vance Feathern, said, you know, hey, is Bangor looking? Says, I've got a friend of mine that, you know, I think might like to come up there. But there's some issues that most churches could take a preacher and we wouldn't be able to. One of the issues is the issue of divorce and remarriage. In most churches where you'd get a preacher from, their views on divorce and remarriage are such that if they brought those views in here and started applying them, it would tear the church apart. It would do a lot of damage to people that I love. And most of you have grown up in this church and you have no idea what it is like where a lot of these preachers come from. It boggles my mind. I just tell you, it boggles my mind. I was talking yesterday to a guy, I actually never met him. My son Daniel introduced me to him. He's a member in Noonan, Georgia. It's a conservative congregation. He's trying hard to do what's right. But they get a lot of people moving in from other places. And they had someone move in who started causing trouble over divorce and remarriage. But here's the odd thing. The guy who was causing the trouble didn't believe any different than this guy I was talking with. His name's George. They believed the same. Furthermore, there was nobody in the congregation that was in a situation of divorce and remarriage. But they ended up splitting the church and taking about half the members with them. What the issue was, it's hard to explain, but it starts with Homer Haley, who is now dead. He died about the age of 100 several years ago. But he had done a lot of teaching of many, many brethren. I've had a class with him. Bruce had studied under him. His view on divorce and remarriage was very similar to what we practice in this congregation. And it's not like by most people in congregations all over the country. And there were several people who were good friends with Homer Haley who remained friends with him after he wrote his book about divorce and remarriage. Ed Harrell, Bob Owen, Paul Earnhardt, those are three very good men that I can think of. They didn't agree with Homer Haley. They took the conservative position on divorce and marriage, but he was still their friend. And this brother that was so upset and tore up the congregation, he was opposed to that. Now, Ed Harrell wasn't part of that church. Bob Owen wasn't part of that church. But George was a friend of Ed Harrell. And what this guy told George is, unless you renounce your friendship with Ed Harrell, I got to withdraw from you. That kind of thing, I'm telling you this so that you understand, we cannot just take the first guy that comes in and preaches a nice sermon. It's terrible the kind of things that are being done out there in the name of the Lord. And there are plenty of people that you could get plenty of recommendations for these guys. I mean, they're faithful preachers as far as people are concerned that would come in here and it wouldn't take very long and they would just tear the place apart. The other issue, I already mentioned my own personal desire that we do meet with the Penobscot Valley people and see if we can work, if it would work for us to put the two groups together. There are a lot of preachers who would feel that their obligation is either to run those people off or else convert them to their way of thinking. And that's a sure way to just split up the church. I mean, if I disagree with one of you, and I do a lot more preaching up here than you do, if I disagree with you, and most every Sunday I get up and I preach on your subject, just try to straighten you out, what's that going to do for this church? It's just going to damage it. And yet, these brethren would feel like they're not being faithful to the Lord unless that's the way they do it. So, we have some challenges as far as who we could get. And I don't have any magical solution. I I do think if we got the right person, it would be a help to this congregation. And I have a new way to get a preacher. I've been wrong before, but I've got a new way. And I'm serious. Pray and ask God. And we really need to do that. God can, I mean, I've shown you the difficulties, but God can get past that. We need to pray. And let me just wrap up the sermon. I've gone longer than I should have gone. But we meet Sunday nights to pray. And one of the things I would like to see an improvement in our prayers, they're great. I mean, our Sunday night services are great. They do a lot of good. I would like to... There's some things I think we could do better. What we normally do, people just from their pews raise their hands and ask for prayers for different situations, mostly people. And we learn people's needs and we get closer by praying for the people's needs, and that's great. But when you look at the Lord's Prayer in Matthew chapter 6, 99% of the things we put on the board fall into just two categories. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses. But the prayer didn't start with those two things. The prayer started with three fundamental points. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. May your name be holy. Your kingdom come. His kingdom's come to us, but wow, a lot of more people need it. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And I would really like us to spend some time in our prayer meetings focusing on that and some detailed things about it. When we say your kingdom come, what we really mean is, Lord, we've got friends and neighbors we'd love to see come to you. And you know people that we don't even know. We've never even met them. But you could use us to meet these people. I mean, there's things we could be praying about in that regard. Now, I'm not saying let's quit, you know, give us this day our daily bread and quit, you know, forgive us our trespasses. And when I say forgive us our trespasses, we're not confessing specific sins. But we are praying for people we know are in spiritual trouble. And that's kind of in that same category. But I think if we could have some prayer meetings where we really focused on God's glory, God's kingdom, God's will, He would answer. And that's where we do what we want. So I hope that's helpful, everyone. I want you to know, I mean, I thought some of you might want to know why people are so happy to be here today and what the difference is. And I hope we can continue to grow. May the Lord bless us in that. Let's stand. We'll have a final prayer.
Our merciful and loving Father in heaven, we give you thanks for the blessing we have in this day, this time we've had with brothers and sisters in faith.